Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The sound of a steel drum evokes images of swaying palm trees, island living, and total relaxation. But if one listens to the lyrics or looks at the history, they'll see much more. A form of political expression and a way to hold officials accountable, calypso music came to represent the voice of the people in Trinidad and Tobago, where it originated. But the style and messaging quickly moved off to other parts of the Caribbean and nearby Venezuela as a musical message board telling tales of corruption, taking on the issues of the day, and eventually facing censorship under British rule. Dr. Nicola Foote is Associate Dean of Professor of History at FGCU, and she is hosting the Caribbean Carnival Arts event this week.
The Caribbean is a core part of our community, but I think often non-Caribbean members of our community don't know enough about the richness of the cultural forms within the Caribbean. We're really showcasing the vibrancy and complexity of these unique musical art forms. Steel pan and calypso are both unique to Trinidad and Tobago. They originated in the Caribbean and they came out of slavery. So they came out of a really horrible history, but emerged as something beautiful and profound.
That was Dr. Nicola Foote, who is organizing this week's events. Yesterday, the Steel Drum Orchestra played for students on the library lawn. And today, this afternoon, actually at 4:30 in Marib Hall, three of Calypso's monarchs will share a little about the history and culture surrounding this genre. They're here with me in the studio. I am in the presence of royalty. We have Dwayne O'Connor, the 2012 Monarch winner. Dwayne, thanks for joining the show.
Hi, good afternoon and welcome to your listeners as well.
It's so great to have you. And then we also have Devon Seal, the 2016 Monarch winner.
Yes, thank you. And it's a pleasure being here.
And Karen Ash, Ashay, the 2011 Monarch winner.
Yes, that's me. Hi.
Thanks for being here. We're talking about calypso music, and you can become part of this conversation, too, by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So I want to start with you, Devon Seal. You're the most recent winner of the Monarch title. Tell me a little bit more about what being a monarch is.
Oh, my God. It's a pleasure, and you know, why I must say that is that I have been singing for the last 31 years, you know, like 10 years as a junior calypsonian, and 20 years I've been trying to capture this title of being calypso monarch.
Oh, so you've been after it for a while.
Yeah. And, you know, thank God I eventually did it last year.
Mm-hmm. I saw the pictures. The blue hat was incredible.
Yes. Thank you.
Did the blue hat help?
Yes, I think so. All that part of it, you know, you have presentation, melody, lyrics, rendition, and originality.
So these are all original songs?
All original songs, yes.
Original songs with your own lyrics, your own presentation and everything.
Everything, yes. And it was composed by one by the name of Christoph Grant, a very prolific writer.
So are there different styles within the calypso genre?
Oh, yes. We have humor. We have political commentary, social commentary. A calypso, at the end of the day, calypso, we can sing on anything.
You can sing about anything.
Anything.
Wow. So, Karen Ashe, you won in 2011, and I was reading that you were pretty young to take that title at 26?
Yes.
24. Were you surprised?
Yes, of course. And that was one of my main objectives in life. So, definitely.
So, have you been working on this since you were a little girl?
Since I was age 11 in 1996.
So what attracted you to calypso?
Well, my dad, originally, he sang soca. So I think I inherited it from him.
So what is soca?
Soca is just like more the dancing type of music, groovy or power. It's a more upbeated beat that rather than the calypso, which is more informative. It tells a story. I mean, soca does as well, but it moves you as well. So it's more the dancing type for the masqueraders.
Festival songs.
And then Dwayne O'Connor, you became monarch in 2012. When did you start performing?
I started performing way back in 1994. So Devon is a little more in terms of years as a performer. And Kareen just started just after me in 96, and I started in 1994. Going through the junior competitions, and of course, we were discussing this morning that I entered the Calypso Monarch title four times. So on my four times going into the finals, I captured the Monarch title once. Yep. So I have the best average.
A best success story.
So that's one in four.
So that's good. So what is it about calypso that really speaks to you?
Well, I would have to say I think it's started in the womb. because my mother would say that as soon as I came out as a baby, in order to get me sleeping, get me good sleep, they would have to put on a cassette. You know, in that time it was a cassette.
Oh, I remember cassettes.
Yes. They'll put on the cassette with the soca, with the calypso music, the Mighty Sparrow. That's one of the greatest calypso legends in the world. Mm-hmm. And they'll put on a calypso sparrow or Duke, one of the calypsonians, and I would fall back to sleep. And once the calypso stops, I would get up and make a ruction in my crib or my playpen.
Oh.
And my mom said one day the calypso music had stopped, and I jumped out of my playpen. And she was preparing to make a big jar of tea for me to drink. Mm-hmm. And I pulled the jar with the hot water on myself.
Oh.
So I had to be hospitalized at the age of 2.
Mm.
So
you were protesting the lack of calypso music.
So
that's powerful.
You know, so it started way back then. You know, I moved from liking it in the crib or the playpen stage, and we had a little table in the gallery when I was 5, and I'd be in my little underwear, my mom said, with the deodorant bottle in my hand and singing
and into a deodorant bottle.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was constant from that age, and I only got into sing professionally at the age of 14. I started the Junior Calypso Monarch and moved from one stage to another. Mm-hmm. And in 2012, I eventually copped the most coveted prize in the Calypso season, carnival season.
I was reading in the Guardian, the publication in Trinidad Tobago,
mm-hmm.
And they always say copped the prize. It's not yes. won the prize. That is
no,
the terminology.
Yeah. Copped.
Okay.
Copped. Yes. The most prestigious.
The most prestigious title for the entire carnivals. Season, yeah. The carnival season. That's the
Calypso
number one.
When is carnival season?
It's usually in February.
Yeah.
So this year, so it's sometimes it falls early, sometimes late. And
depends
it also
when it's
sometimes
Ash Wednesday.
In March.
Ash Wednesday.
Oh, it's because it's like a dimanche grass.
Dimanche grass.
Gotcha.
So creme de la creme.
Yes. Yeah. So this year coming, the carnival season is the second Monday and Tuesday in February. It's either the 12th and 13th or 13th and 14th.
Yeah.
One of those 2 days.
Now there's a 2017 monarch.
Yes.
Correct?
Actually,
right.
This year, for the first time in a long time, because since 2010, the youth have more or less dominated the calypso competition.
Yeah.
So I started it.
Corinne started in 2011, and I took it from her in 2012.
Yes.
And then you have a Chucky. He won in 2014 and 15.
I won in 16.
Yes.
And then it took a veteran to take it back from me, because the person who won he won the most titles.
Is
the Mighty Chuck. That's Dr. Chuck. Hollis Liverpool.
And I play second.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations.
And he actually won the title
nine times.
So would you say that there's a difference in style between the current monarch, the 2017 guy, who says kind of an older generation guy, mm-hmm. and
definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But does it still remain the voice of the people?
It is.
Oh, yes.
Always.
Oh, yes.
Always. It may have a different style, a different touch, a different feel, a different bounce, a different groove.
Yep.
But it remains the calypso music, the calypso art form, which is from the voice of the people.
Mm-hmm. So, Devon, I want to ask you, what does the history of calypso music mean to you? What do you think is important for people to know about the history of this music?
First of all, you know, the calypso music came out of protest. So it started off where the African slaves wanted to sing against their slave masters, and they would have disguised the type of music that they would be singing, where the slave masters wouldn't understand them.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds so joyful, but it's singing about the most painful things.
Yes, mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, it emerged whereby they started to sing on different topics, whereby even the slave masters,
mm-hmm.
they as well got involved into the carnivals,
mm-hmm.
and from then on, calypso, you know, became popular.
Yeah, and then it ended up getting censored.
So then you started to sing festival songs. Yeah, it's also censored. Still today, you know, we experience that problem where
Correct.
A lot of politicians, you know, mm-hmm. while they cannot actually get involved and
mm-hmm.
directly, how to say it? Directly
Stop.
Suppress the, yeah. the calypso, you know, but
do it kind of on a down low
yes,
kind
yeah.
of way.
Mm-hmm.
Karen, I wanted you to tell me a little bit about the song Uncle Jack.
Yeah. Well, as you know, Uncle Jack is Jack Warner. And within the timing of the FIFA Bacchanal, and then he was a minister as well in Trinidad and Tobago. And my writer decided he should write on it because he was the popular guy. He was the guy, he was almost behind the prime minister, behind Kamla Prasad Bisesa. And we just decided to sing on it. And it worked for us because he was the most popular topic at the time. So I just caught the title, the most prestigious title, which was $2 million.
Yeah.
And yeah, I won.
And Uncle Jack.
With Uncle Jack and Careful What You Ask For. And
tell me, what was Careful What You Ask For? What was that about?
That's basically life itself, the choices that you make in life. You know, sometimes you're with someone and you decide to go to somebody else because things wasn't working out. But then when you move on to that other person, he's more of a monster than the one you were with before. So it's basically careful what you ask for.
That's always sound advice.
Yeah.
So, Duane, tell me a little bit about, what does the steel drum mean to Calypso? What is its origins?
Well, the steel drum, again, as we would say, it came out of protest again. And the Steel Pan Foundation was founded way back in the 1930s. If you Google or you go back to one of Lord Kitchener's favorite songs, he say, Pan made its entry, as I recall to mine, 15 February, Carnival 39. So now I'm calling on every single steel pan to celebrate the birthday of Pan. So 1939, the steel band started way back then. And how our carnival is, in those days, in order to take the masqueraders, because you have masqueraders going through the streets, so the steel pan men, they would usually play the pans, because, you know, it's the pan is from an oil drum, right? We take it, they fashion it, and they tune it. So you have pan tuners. We have a lot of pan tuners all over Trinidad and Tobago. Of course, we have the best pan tuners because it's our national instrument.
It is the instrument from
there. Right? And, of course, it's fashioned, and I said tuned and that kind of thing. And it plays the song. So we would use that in the olden day, in the gold days, in the old days, that steel pan will be used to make the road march songs, because in those days they didn't have speakers and song systems moving through the streets.
Yeah.
You'd have the pan men moving through the streets. And those were
they're loud, though.
Yes.
They really do carry.
Yes.
We had them on campus, and I could hear them
yesterday,
all the way over here.
Correct.
It echoes just perfectly.
Yes, and it's so sweet.
So true.
It's so sweet. It can play.
It's a really clean note.
Clean. Yes. It play, and it can pan. And of course, there's another song that says pan could play anything. Pan can play jazz, hip hop, reggae.
Oh, they did. They did a Lionel Richie song.
Right.
Yesterday.
So, and of course, you know Lionel Richie is from Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah. I did. So, see, I didn't know that. I'm learning so much.
Yeah.
So, again, the pan music lends itself to the calypso music, and that's where it first started. And then, of course, you know, we have a major pan competition in Trinidad and Tobago.
But they're not monarchs.
Huh?
They're, not
they're steel
though.
Pan champions.
Okay, but so they're still not royalty.
No. But we go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the Panorama competition, which takes place the Saturday night before the actual Monarch competition. Right, that takes place on Saturday. The Calypso Monarch takes place on the Sunday. And then we have the Parade of the Bands. That's with the Masqueraders on Monday and Tuesday. So the steel pan competition. So you have a fire. You have a. It's an elimination process.
Mm-hmm.
So this process goes on in early January. The judges, there will be judges going around to the different pan tents,
mm-hmm.
right? So they are housed in different areas across the island, Trinidad and Tobago, and then from that preliminary stage, they move into a semi-final stage. So they move out of the pan tent. And they go to the big Grand Savannah stage. That's where all the activities takes place, right? And the pan semifinals takes place there. And from that, because of course there are categories, there are small, medium, and large bands.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, you have they are now brought down to a smaller number for the final, the Saturday night, and then the winner is adjudged.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's more or less similar to how the Calypso competition is judged. Of course, we in Calypso, we have Calypso.
Over 300 Calypsonians would be judged in the preliminaries.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will select 40 Calypsonians for the semifinals.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, sometimes it's 10 to 15.
Yeah.
Are they usually from Trinidad or Tobago?
Tobago's
pretty small. How many people?
It's one country.
It's one.
Yeah, I know, but
two
I mean, they're two islands. So
two islands.
Tobago is, how many people are on Tobago compared to
30,000, 30,000, 35,000.
Yeah. Is there any kind of rivalry or anything?
Oh, no, it's just love.
Just all.
Yes.
Yeah.
One nation of two islands.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. But it is a bit smaller, though. So, I mean, the population center would
much
be
smaller,
obviously.
Yeah,
much smaller.
Less. Is there a difference if you were to visit one or the other as far as the population centers or tourism or
So Tobago is more tourism-based, mm-hmm. while Trinidad is more energy-based. You know, we have the natural resources of petroleum, natural gas,
a lot of natural
asphalt,
resources, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So when Calypso became more and more powerful in the early 1900s, the British, as we mentioned earlier, they tried to censor it to the point that recordings were dumped into the sea. Mm-hmm. So Calypsonians kept pushing those boundaries, though, and then they started using something called doublespeak, or the use of double entendres.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still common?
Yeah.
Very much so,
yeah.
Well, and it's still, and then what you mentioned earlier, the difference between the upbeat tempo, yet
Calypso and soca.
But then the seriousness of the subject matter, that continues today.
Yes. Still. So when you say double entendre and that kind of thing, some of the Calypsonians, like, I'll give you an example. The mighty Chalkdus, right? He's one of those that's famous for the double entendre in his Calypso music.
He always says that he loves the mask.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, mask the Calypso.
Mm-hmm. So he would say, today he playing the ras, but he's not playing the ras. He playing the?
I don't know.
No, well, they don't use that term here.
Oh,
what's
yeah,
ras?
They don't. We have to use,
They don't use it. So you could use the example, like, for example, he wanted to talk about child marriages.
Right.
Because in Trinidad, you know, we have a population where 42% of the population are East Indian descendants.
Yes.
So a percentage of that population too would be practicing Hinduism. And you know, they have, like, they would approve child marriages, like some children.
We just talked about a bill about that in Florida. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he wanted to, you know, how he would talk. This is what he did this year, 2017.
That's how you won the title.
How he won the title. How am I going to deal with this topic instead of just coming out and saying, I don't agree
don't
with
agree.
Child marriages, that someone who's 65-year-old getting married to someone who is 14 years old.
Yeah.
How am I going to do it? And he came up with the topic, what? Arithmetic.
Arithmetic.
Learn from arithmetic.
Yeah.
And he did his punchline. And the Calypso would have been 75 cannot go into 14. Now, there's a sexual connotation.
Okay, I understand that, but it's still the double entendre.
It's double entendre.
So that's how it is.
So you see?
But it's still being used.
Oh,
and it's
yes.
using
mm-hmm.
the it, topics it, of today.
Definitely.
Now, in your 2012 performance, Duane, you acted out being arrested on stage. What was that about?
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, I was dealing with, there's this gentleman called Ian Allen. He's in charge. He runs a program called Crime Watch, a talk show called Crime Watch. And I know that you have shows here like that called Crime Watch in America. Mm-hmm. So it's similar like it, where he will be dealing with criminals and those people who do illicit things. And he will bring them to the fore, shine them up on the TV, let people see what they're doing and that kind of thing, and try to solve the crimes and that kind of thing. And he was the most popular guy at the time, you know. His listenership was like 75% to 80% of the population in Trinidad and also in America, all over. Persons would watch the program. A lot of persons would watch the program. And myself and the composer, we came up with that idea, and we used it, The Hunt Is On.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
The Hunt Is On.
The Hunt Is On.
Okay.
And that was his tagline, The Hunt Is On.
Yeah.
So your writer is an important part of it too.
Very, very important. Very, very important. And this is the thing with calypsos. You have persons that write and persons that don't write. So we are some of the younger ones. We do write. I've written calypsos before, but of course you have people who Frank Sinatra never wrote his own songs. You know.
Oh, yeah.
So we have persons who can write. And they just don't have the ability to sing. So they look for good calypsonians like us.
Well, and perform. Because like you said, the performance is...
Performance is a whole...
Very important,
yeah. And I would remember from an old gentleman, you know, who passed away, a neighbor of mine in his 90s. He once told me, he said, it's the singer, not the song.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always refer to that because he always speaks of the performance.
Mm-hmm.
The singer is always important. You can have the greatest song, but once you don't have
and
a
if you
good,
don't deliver it right,
that's correct.
Right.
Then nobody's delivery, even going to listen.
Delivery
right?
is important.
Mm-hmm. It is. It really is. Karen, I wanted to ask you, you're going to be talking with people later on today. What do you think is the most important thing that people learn about calypso music?
To be honest, everything about calypso people learn from because it's a storytelling. It's different topics as you go along in life, your life story, because I have a song on my life story as well. There are songs that you could talk about the issues in Trinidad and Tobago, you know, things.
Or worldwide as well.
Or worldwide mm-hmm. as well. You can talk about God. It's everything in one where calypso is concerned. So that's the most important, I believe. And as a woman, it's very hard for a woman to win the calypso competition as well. So I'll be emphasizing on that.
Are there a lot of women in calypso?
Oh, yes, definitely. Now there are, and before it was condemned. It wasn't condoned at all.
It was not enjoyed. And, you know, calypso had a little moment of great popularity in the United States.
Oh, yes, mm-hmm.
Coca-Cola. And, of course, Harry Belafonte.
I listen to him a lot. I've got to be honest.
Harry Belafonte, he started something with calypso that I think the calypsonian at the time didn't really understand. Mm. And I think that's where it broke off and calypso has moved on. But there was a movement with him at that time. And if the calypsonian had stayed all
recognize that vision.
Yes.
You know, it might have been.
All now we'd have been far more advanced from where we are this time.
So because, true. You know, 2014, we celebrated 100 years since the first vocal recording.
Yeah.
That was even before reggae came on the scene.
Mm-hmm. So 1914 was the first
1914,
recording?
1914, first
vocal recording. Vocal recording.
1912 was the first calypso recording, but it was just a band.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
That's quite a milestone.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
You know, 100 years. And there are so many things I feel like kind of have come off of calypso. There are a lot of genres that have kind of spun off.
Of course,
yeah,
of course.
Different areas.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Especially the soca today, soca pop, which is the most rhythmic, what she was talking about, what the type of music.
The more dance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Festivals. So.
Where do you see it going in the future? Do you see it kind of staying the same or continuing to split?
Well, calypso is something that I think we have been hearing since we came on the scene that calypso is dying.
It's dying.
And I think it's alive and well because, you see, there's an institution in Trinidad and Tobago whereby there are a lot of young calypsonians emerging. And there are things in place for these young calypsonians, the competition. So it's definitely alive and well, and it will live on.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of younger generation these days are very
interested
embracing
in music, loving it, practicing it regularly. Of course, once you have the schools involved, and that's important. We have schools involved and a lot of parents, and that is very important.
And especially like things like what FGCU is doing today.
Doing
you know, a lot of other universities are doing that now to get it, you know, to expand, you know.
When I was over there watching the steel band yesterday, of course, I had to go. Yeah. And a couple of students walked by, and I think they were from Trinidad and Tobago. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. They were, they're from Trinidad, so obviously they're good. Well, they know what they're doing. This is good. So they appreciated it. But I want to thank you all for being part of my show today, and I hope you enjoy your event later day on campus. Again, that's at Marieb Hall here on FGCU campus starting at 4:30 this afternoon. So I want to thank you again, Duane O'Connor, the 2012 Monarch winner, Devon Nasil, the 2016 Monarch winner, and Karen Ashe, the 2011 Monarch winner. Thank you so much for being here.
And thanks
for having us.
Our show today was produced by Rachel Iacovone, and yours truly. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1. WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM. NPR for Southwest Florida.